Hi, this is Robert Kiyosaki, and you're listening to Entrepreneur's Circle, Eric Cabral.
On this episode,
making the jump from poker to real estate was difficult. I had a few years that I had to retrain myself on what it actually means to like earn money, because in the poker world, it's easy come, easy go. And so my spending habits had to adapt, and then my income had to decrease, and the things I wanted to do had to decrease, and I was working on the bottom, and all these things were difficult. But at the end of the day, when you know exactly what you want, like let's say 10 years from now, it's a no-brainer.
Hey there, folks, and welcome to the Entrepreneur Circle, where we've built a community that shares lessons learned throughout our journeys, celebrate wins, our eureka moments, and embrace the F word, meaning failure, which I've come to realize that failure is success in progress. I'm Eric Cabral, your host, a husband, a father of two brilliant girls, and I've been called a heart-centered entrepreneur by my peers and mentors. My mission in life is to make the world a better place, one mic at a time. So I'm happy and humble to have you join in on that mission. And I hope that by the end of the show, we would have added value in your life. So if you're ready to jump into the circle, let's get to it. Hey, I'm so glad you're here, because I don't often get the opportunity to share with you exactly what I do and what we do here at Honor Your Brands. So we help the folks in our community and our clients to launch a podcast and then produce them on a weekly basis. We also help to promote each episode with close to a dozen social media posts that consist of quote cards, sound bites, and video clips. And then we post them for you on your socials automatically. So if you're a business owner with a ton on your plate, and a podcast just seems super overwhelming, I get it. We don't need one more thing to worry about. So let me and my team at On Air Brands do the heavy lifting each week so that you can focus on what you do best, which is to build your business, have more time to pour into your family and your community, or just plain chill and recharge. So feel free to email me at eric@onairbrands.com so that we can book time together to chat about how we can align with your mission and how you can align with ours, which is to make the world better. One mic at a time. Now back to the show. Welcome back, folks, to another episode of the Entrepreneur Circle. I'm your most happy and humbled host, as usual. I am always blessed to be in the room or virtual room with somebody that I know, love, and respect, because his story is going to knock your socks off. That's the first time I've used that phrase. I'm bringing that back, really? Bro. I'm bringing it back. Knock your socks off. It was like straight out of the 30s. Like, hey, knock your socks. I got a cigar in my mouth. But anyway, I have a dude here that's going to really, really inspire you because it's not your typical story. So I have Pasha Esfandiari here. So welcome to the show, brother.
Thanks, man. Let's knock some socks off. Let's do it.
I'm going to do a quick intro for those who don't know you.
Sure.
So Pasha, straight up, just landed here. Like, what were you, 3 years old? And you started figuring things out, right?
Yeah,
from, and I'll let you tell your story. But he began, I'm gonna fast forward, you know, that, you know, you started investing in 2011 by flipping homes, mostly found through auctions. And then now you tell me if this is needs to be updated. You have over 250 million transactions over multiple asset classes. So residential, boutique hotels, multifam, which is which everybody that we know loves multifamily.
Yeah, they do.
And what's cool is you're also working in housing programs to help vulnerable communities, which this is huge. I love this, and I want to dive deep into that as well. But Pasha is also the co-founder and CEO of Evoke Capital, which he founded recently with the objective of helping people achieve financial freedom through investing, real estate investing, and many of the asset classes that we mentioned here. So here's the cool thing, and I'm gonna tease it out here and let you take it before we jump into the eureka moment, in that you, rumor has it, started creating massive wealth and financial freedom for you through
poker and your bankroll and your winnings through poker. So we're going to get into that, man. I just want people to know like where this could potentially go and how you are like my hero, because I wanted to be a poker pro and I was terrible or not good, you know, and then had the balls really. But anyway, welcome to the show, brother.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. That's a good intro. It's funny when you're reading off like and achieve financial freedom, it feels like such an elevator pitch. I got to change that somehow, man. That it's so cheesy. I had someone write it for me because I hate the about me sections.
Yeah.
But I have to change that.
But dude, it's true, man. It's still true.
It is true, but it sounds cheesy.
Gotcha. I think people will appreciate it, and who doesn't want financial freedom? So,
I agree.
So let's get into it, brother. The first question of the day for you is your eureka moment, major thing that happened in life or business that caused you to pivot.
My eureka moment, it's going to be life. It was when I was 25 years old. I was living in Houston, living with my ex-girlfriend who I hated. Or strongly disliked. And I was very depressed. I hated my life. Everything about my life I hated. I hated my friends. Hate is a strong word. I was strongly disliked my friends, my living situation, and my financial situation, and my trajectory in life was the number one thing that I was really hard on myself about. And when I was 25, on my birthday, I remember just being in my room alone, crying, like, just immense amount of tears, super sad. And I called my aunt. I just said, I don't know what to do in my life like this. She's like, you just got to take it seriously. And that's kind of what I've been feeling. I just feel like I was such a letdown for my potential that I knew that I had in me. And in that day, in my one of my like darkest times, I made a really pivotal decision to really take my life head on and become the creator of my life instead of letting life happen to me, which led me on to this beautiful journey of where I'm at now. It's like the one moment. Well, actually, there's many, many moments, but that's a pivotal, pivotal moment that I'm so deeply in gratitude about because I experienced enough pain to make a different decision in that moment. Mm.
Man, so I know you're thinking about probably that particular situation that you were in where you were crying and on the floor, I think you said. And do you remember, because it didn't happen overnight, like what was some of the first steps that you took to say, okay, yeah, I'm going to become the creator of my life. I'm going to take control.
Yeah. You know, the first thing that happened was there, I ended up moving to Las Vegas. I said, well, let me start playing poker professionally in Las Vegas to really kind of see how I was doing and see if this really was the trajectory I wanted to go, right? I had been playing poker up to that point for about 4 or 5 years, traveling the world, but it was very nonchalant for me. I was good at it. I was afforded a lot of freedom because I was young and making really good money at that time. And I was like, let me really see if I want to really take this seriously. Let me see if I want to go, you know, do the tour and all this. I used to do the tour, but only play cash games. I never really cared about tournaments, this, that. Once I got to Las Vegas, I soon realized within like a month or two, I don't want this lifestyle. I don't like this. And like, I don't know if anyone knows poker. There was also this moment. I had already been thinking of that, but there was this one moment at the poker table where, you know, a bunch of guys were just sitting down and women. And there's one whale who sits down and he just starts losing a bunch of money as a girl, like, quintessential like girl behind him, that scene of like, this guy just has a bunch of money, what an idiot. And I had an epiphany. It's like all these poker pros want to be the best poker player and get this guy's money. And in that moment, I was just like, this is stupid. I want to be that guy. I want to be the whale. I don't want to have to get lucky and have a whale sit down at the table and lose a bunch of money. I want to be the guy that can go to any table and lose a bunch of money and not care. And so in that moment, I just said, everything's illogical. I'm going to go back and really take my life in another trajectory that it has higher outcomes in the future. And that's what I did. I took 2 steps back, learned about real estate, started as a broker and worked my way up to investing.
Holy shit, you just blew my freaking mind, dude. Holy moly. So yeah, I don't even know where to start, because I want to rewind back to the poker world, because of those who haven't figured it out, your older brother Antonio, yep. I'm imagining played a big role in influencing you to take that leap. And were you aware of poker, or were you playing it at the family table growing up, or?
No, indirectly. I mean, when my brother won his first tournament in 2004, I had known he'd been playing poker at this point. But I didn't really know the kind of money that you could be made into it. And I didn't really have it on my radar. But when I had dropped out of college, you know, very shortly after high school, I really wasn't going anywhere. And I just said, oh, well, my brother won like 1.4 million. If he could do it, I could do it. You know, that just that competitiveness in me. And I did well. I did really well for a kid going into it. Now, granted, maybe everyone else sucked a little bit more, but I did well.
You know? Yeah, and, yeah.
And I
did
didn't
he
have a
take you under your wing? Did you? How did that work out? Was it beneficial to have him with his experience and his winnings? And how did that?
You know, there's work? A lot of genius in my brother. One of the geniuses probably isn't on how to teach, but man, you know, there'd be a lot of times where I'd talk to him about a hand. Or most of the times I would talk to him about overall concepts. And I think him and I are very alike in that sense. Sometimes he can't tell you why he's doing what he's doing at the poker table. He doesn't break it down like that analytically, but we're very concept driven. Like, here's the overall concept. This is the position. When you're in this position, you need to be doing more of this. You need to be looking more of this. So he really helped me develop the right winning concepts that I needed to develop into my own playing style. And so he was always there to help me, but I always remember his advice. It was very simple. If I ever break down a hand, like, hey, did I play this right or did I play this wrong? He'd give me two pieces of advice here or a breakdown. You did the right thing, obv, is what he would say, or you're an idiot, don't do that again. Like, that's really, it's really polarized on it. And then I would go and figure it out and break it down and ask my friends and whatnot. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. A level of self-awareness is huge when it comes to getting better as a poker, well, just in life in general, but especially at the poker table.
Yeah.
And ego too, right? Like, being able to sort of like push that aside. But dude, it's funny you're saying Antonio was not a good teacher, but in terms of concept, like, you guys can talk at that level. It's funny because in 2004, I bought a bunch of DVDs, and your brother was one of the people teaching on it, with like Phil Locke and Gus Hansen and a bunch of dudes, and your brother was on it. And I learned a shit ton, dude, because nobody wanted to spend $100-$150 or something is what I spent, but everyone in my home game was terrible. And they didn't know about books. I was reading every Brunson book. I was reading everything. I'm sure that's probably what you were doing too. Absorb all of it. And I became a home game hero. But anyway, so I understand this world that you're talking about. So I'm super, super intrigued by what you said about the whale, because I was like, why did he say whale instead of donkey? Because that's what we say at the poker table, right? It's like, oh, there's a donkey here. And then we gotta, or if you don't know who it is, it's you, right?
Yeah.
But you saw it as a really cool opportunity in that this guy's clearly rich and successful, at least on a monetary level. And I've never thought to position it in your mind that way. Like, how, so that was the catalyst. In that moment, you realized, wait a minute, what is this guy doing? And I don't want to be these guys anymore.
Yeah.
Because that feeling of like sharks, like they smell blood in the water. And it's like, who?
I don't like that energy. Yeah. Let me say, my brother's an excellent, excellent teacher. We just never really broke down with us. I read his book. I went to his courses. His commentating is I think the best commentating for a poker pro there is out there. And I'm not being biased. I generally, the way he breaks down is really palatable for others to understand, while these other like poker pros break it down to the 23rd degree. And it's like, you do not know who your viewership is. Anyways, he's excellent at that. And I did learn a lot. I just like to give him a hard time. That's just that, you know, is probably more the case than anything. But when it comes to, you know, the donkey or the whale, it was a no-brainer for me because I hated the lifestyle, man. Like, I love everybody. When you get to know me, I genuinely really enjoy everyone. And I can swim with everyone's personalities and find like fun in it, right? When I'm at the poker table to play really good poker, I had to trick myself to hating everybody.
Mm.
And I said, this sucks, man. I just want to have a good time. I want my life to be a good time. When you've been depressed for the majority of your life and you're trying to work out of that depression, you don't want to hate people. Mm-hmm. You want to like people and love people. And so I just knew all of these things kind of coupled together with who I was as a person, what I wanted in life, and the trajectory I knew I could put myself on. This wasn't it for me.
Yeah, gotcha. So you adopted a personality that you didn't feel was benefiting you. You had to be this angry dude in order to like dominate, right? But there's also brands like your brother broke through the pack, you know, and basically, you know, all we talk about is personal branding now and how big that is, and podcasting being one of them, being a piece of that. Like, he was one of the, you know, the rock stars that are walking around. And
and
I think about personalities that you talk about. Like, there are people out there that are super happy go lucky, like Daniel Negreanu, who's like, hey, he's always like happy. He doesn't seem like he wants to hate anybody. But you're right, though. There's a certain personality and something innate in you that you can leverage in order to mentally win.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the mental game, can you talk about like when you transitioned? Like, how much of mental fortitude, how much mental work and gym, you know, reps at the gym did you put in order to, like, well, you had courage to leave what you were doing. You were a waiter at the time, right? When you were like, hey, I'm leaving this. I'm going to be a poker pro. Like, is that what you're doing? What was your profession at the time?
Yeah, I was just a waiter, just kind of figuring it out.
Yeah. So like, that's a big risk, right? So like, transitioning from what you were doing to doing that, and then now is another risk. So you had a high tolerance for risk.
Oh yeah, I always have.
Yeah. So I love the parallels with that. So can you speak to the mental aspect of, you know, taking the risks and what you've done, what you did to transition again and be like, okay, now I'm going to do this. Did you know any real estate investors? Like, how did you do it?
Yeah. Well, I knew that I wanted more for my life. And I've had an innate ability to at least think of what I want in the future. And I think, I don't know when that happened, but at some point in my life, it happened where I've been able to really think about my life as like life units in a very like linear scale. And so I never thought about my life in the sense of what I need to do the next 2-3 years to get ahead or short-term goals. I've always worked myself backwards. And so making the jump from poker to real estate was difficult. I had a few years that I had to retrain myself on what it actually means to like earn money, because in the poker world, it's easy come, easy go. And so my spending habits had to adapt. And then my income had to decrease and the things I wanted to do had to decrease. And I was working on the bottom, and all these things were difficult. But at the end of the day, when you know exactly what you want, like let's say 10 years from now, it's a no-brainer, right? And so, yes, there were some short-term challenges, but in my mind, those 2-3 years amount to like nothing compared to me living another 70 years doing what I want to be doing and building something bigger than myself and something I can have for my children. So there was some innate like risk, some innate hardships and mental hardships, but it was so needed. And so that's why I look at my life 10 years and moving forward, because it makes all the decisions really easy.
Mm. But the decision to go to investing in real estate, were those conversations being had around the poker table? Like, how did I get introduced to you? And then also, I want to remind me, if I hope to remember, I want to talk about the glamorization of poker, especially from 2004 to like, it looked really cool. You could be a rock star. Let's talk about that real quick. There's this rock star aspect of it, right? Like, I wanted to be I wanted to be your brother. Like, I'm like, hey, I'm like Antonio. Look at me. I got glasses. I got, hey. And then because it seemed cool, right? But I know there's a dark world behind it where like people are being bankrolled. They're not even, they're winning, they have big winnings, but they have to give it away. Can you talk a little bit about the sort of dark side of what happened and how you had to be good at finances in order to succeed. Like,
sure.
Survive.
Yeah. Let's put it this way. I don't know how to actually equate it. I'd say out of like 100% of all the poker players, I want to say maybe 10% are winners long term. Out of that 10%, it might be a little skewed now because I'm kind of out of touch with the poker world, but I would say maybe 1 or 2% of that 10% actually hold on to their money. The dark side of poker is that typically people who come into the poker world have a tendency and an affliction towards an addictive personality because it is an adrenaline rush. And so that usually plays out in other aspects of their life, whether that's table games, blackjack, roulette, all the things, a propensity to doing drugs, drinking too much. So it really, the people who have really made it in poker, who have a really healthy rock style lifestyle and who have had like life-changing money, I would say is incredibly, incredibly rare. My brother being one of them. And being very early on, my brother taught me, stay away from the table games. Do not give edge away. And so there's a, let's put it this way. I used to travel around playing poker with four other guys. They would play the tournaments. I would just play, usually typically play the cash games. I would put these four other guys much better than I was in poker skill set. They were better than me, but I had better discipline with my money off the table. They always made money. They would go from boom to bust. And I've done that too. Don't get me wrong. I've definitely had nights where I've lost 150% of my net worth multiple times. But these guys had an addictive personality where I never really had an addictive personality. I could easily say no to the table games and the allure of the rock star lifestyle. So there's the one aspect of it. The second of it is, the second thing is, in my opinion, the energy, if you're susceptible to energy like I am, it's a little bit of a scummy atmosphere to be around because everyone's trying to take each other's money. Everyone's trying to one-up each other and figure out a way to take them. And then there's a lot of people who are dead broke who are always asking for money. It's kind of a scummy, enabling world. And that is the part that I don't enjoy. Now, as a disclaimer, I have met some of the most amazing people and some of my best friends through poker. So I painted a really dark picture, but there are a lot of great people in there. But man, there is a propensity of too much drinking, too much drugs, too much addiction and gambling. Yeah. So that's really the dark side of poker.
Yeah, I'll thank Matt Damon for that. And then also Chris Moneymaker, right? Both of their faults.
Yeah. But, the guy went dead broke right after he won all that money.
That's crazy. What are the odds, dude, that somebody's last name is Moneymaker?
Right.
Wins the World Series of Poker. What was that, 2002?
It was really early on, man.
Yeah.
Right in the range.
And then it got so crazy that you can literally, I remember going into the mall and Victoria's Secrets had a poker chip set that they were selling. Yeah. It was pink and red. And I was like, what in tarnation's going on here? But anyway, so real estate, conversations around the table, is that where things like how did it bloom for you?
No, my father having to move us here from Iran, giving up everything he had. Even my mother stayed in Iran, but he really had to work two jobs to keep put like food on the plate for me and my brother. But I feel like at some point I took on his dream. I wanted him to live vicariously through me because my whole life he'd talked about this potential real estate deal that he could have had. That piece of land he wanted to buy. And so because of it growing up, I just always had an affliction or an attraction to real estate. And it was kind of like a no-brainer for me. I always knew from a very young age, I wanted to be real estate. Poker was actually supposed to be a means to an end to get into real estate. And I just always had it inside of me. So then it was like, all right, I'm going to get into real estate. I want to go learn education. I actually did intern for a family friend for 3 months on how to do sight unseen from auctions. And then when I came back to Vegas, I was playing poker and really just kind of funding my deals that I was buying from the auctions.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. So you were funding everything. You weren't partnering at the time early on. That's crazy. So
I worked a lot of hours.
Mm,
a lot.
On both sides, on the poker side and real estate side.
Yeah, I burned my candle from both ends for 5 or 6 years.
And what was your situation at home? Were you single at the time?
No, with I was married. Yeah. And I, you know, I'm super blessed. I have a wife that gives me chills even talking about it. During that time, I always told her, I said, hey, baby, just trust me. I'm building something for us. I want to be able to retire by the time I'm 40. That is my goal. And just trust me on this. And she was working as a bartender and making good money. She was actually supporting me in the beginning, like with it and helping put into the real estate deals as well. And so I owe a lot to her. I mean, she even allowed me to sell her house so I can grab the equity to go and flip more homes. So I owe a lot to my wife in that aspect. But she would at times, you know, if I had been out for 2 days in a row, as soon as I get home, she'd give me like a drink that's like all just like juices and nutrition, a really nutritional meal as I was on my way to a real estate deal. I'd go poker, come home, go straight to real estate. It was really bad.
That's really wild, unhealthy. Dude. And yeah. How long did you do that for?
For about 5 or 6 years of my life.
Wow, dude. Amazing. And you were in your prime. So you had your health. Yeah, by default, you had some semblance of health and you had to be like, because if God forbid you got hurt, you wouldn't be able to do any of those things.
Yeah. If I would go back, I wouldn't do that again. I really treated my body like crap. Yeah, I would never, ever do that. I am so disciplined in my life now about my health. Like now I'm just like, I need my 8.5 hours of sleep. I got my morning routine. Don't mess with me. This is what I got to do. But yeah, those years were pretty rough on my body.
Dude, marriage. Yeah, you brought up such a good point though with your wife. And I have a very similar relationship in terms of full support in anything and everything that I think, except for poker, bro. I didn't tell you this. I told her I wanted to quit my job. I was going to sell my house and my car, and I was going to use that as bankroll. That was the one idea. She was like, no, we just met. What are you talking about? And I was like, I'm going to live with you. Yeah. I think I was probably, I don't know, I was at 5 figures. And I was like, I'm just going to take that and I'm going to bankroll. She was like, you're a banana. So I still tell that to this day. But when I got into real estate, she was like, good, do that.
Right.
I'm going to quit my job though. She's like, oh, okay, maybe. But yeah, similar to your wife, she was working full time and she was basically supporting me. But partnerships, like how important is that in your life and your strategies in terms of like you're doing all your own deals? And at one point, did you realize, no, I need to start partnering with people to get bigger?
Only recently. And man, I've always been the lone wolf in everything I've done. I've done now, obviously, like when I was flipping homes and I first got, I did some JV deals. With my contractor and whatnot. But up until 2 years ago, I was a lone wolf, man. I did my own developments, everything on my own. Once I really understood the power of partners and also waiting for the right partners to come into my life, that was really important for me because I want to not only like my partners, but I want to be able to trust them in what they do. Everything unlocked for me, like everything. I mean, having partners I have now and the team I've built around me, all the employees that I have now in Evoke, it is just like, it just unlocks quite essentially everything that I want to do in my mind. And my mind can run really quickly. But now I have a team to help me run as fast as I want, which is amazing. So yeah, it's unlocked everything for me. It's probably the biggest game changer I'm going to have in my life. My results are just shot up in a higher trajectory for sure.
Any regrets not doing it sooner?
Yes. Yeah, yes and no, because I waited. I now have the right partners. So I'm not like, oh, I wish I did it sooner. You have to kind of experience it. But yeah, absolutely. If I can reapply, if I had to, let's just say, hypothetically start all over again, I would go run with the team and I would run quick.
Yeah. What was happening during the time when you were doing it all on your own? Was it a trust thing?
Yeah, it's just a trust thing. It was, I was always too nervous to bring other people's money involved. I little OCD about how I like things to be done. And I'm a control freak. I'll just call myself out. I'm a control freak. But I now have partners that are as much as I am control freaks in their own ways. Mm. And I trust them wholeheartedly. And so with that, I have been learning to let go. I have been learning to trust and to delegate. And when you do, it's been amazing. I have a mentor of mine. He wrote the book Die with Zero. It's a good friend of mine, Bill Perkins. And he goes, if you think there's not 7 billion people in this world that can do what you do better, you're an idiot. And I'm like, yeah, there's actually a lot of merit there. And so why don't I design my lifestyle the way I want it? And then let me figure out who and not what.
Mm. Let's talk about Evoke and what you guys are doing at Evoke Capital. So you've assembled a team. You trust everyone's in their zone of genius every day, hopefully.
What are you
guys currently doing? And what's the ultimate goal and mission?
Yeah, so we strictly focus on mobile home parks only. And we just created a fund. We just launched a $15 million fund here like 2 weeks ago.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. It's been going great. Feedback's been going great. Investors have been coming in more easier than I thought, which has been an incredible feedback. And so this is who we are. We're a little under 1,000 units right now, 1,000 pads. We're about to be about like 1,350 pretty soon with these two deals closing. Our goal is to get to 15,000 pads. We want to be one of the biggest players. We will be one of the biggest players in America. And we're going to do that with time and doing that conservatively. But yeah, that's our goal and plan.
That's amazing, dude.
Yeah.
Talk about that. For those who don't know the benefits and how it is important, because the housing crisis and options for people, boomers, you know, like you teach. Let the folks home know why they should probably get involved in this fund and or in other ways around this industry.
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, in any route, there's a ton of good operators out there for sure. But mobile home parks, the reason why attracted me to it is AI. You'll know what this term is, game selection, right? Game selection is where you go find the easier games with easier poker players, and you're not trying to compete against the stiffest competition. So I go to game selection. I've always done that in my poker career, and I've been able to make pretty good money at it. That's kind of the same thing here with mobile home parks. If you describe mobile home parks as a niche within the bigger, broader sense of commercial real estate, well, I'm a niche within a niche. I go to these like secondary and tertiary markets where most institutional money can't go to. But the thing is here is I'm dealing with mom and pop sellers. And so there's really high yields. And this is the only asset class, in my opinion, where the supply is dwindling and the demand is increasing. Because it is low income housing, we're not able to feasibly build any more low income housing. The infrastructure costs too much. And then for you to even break even as an investor, you have to charge more. So it's actually out of the low income bracket. So there is no more low income housing being built. And we do know that the middle class is getting pinched and pinched. So the demand is increasing for what we have and the product that we have. Obviously, unless the government steps in a really big way, but we've kind of seen that they kind of really turn a blind eye to it. So really what it comes down to is what kind of investor you are. I went to mobile home parks because it has higher cash flows. Mobile home parks are a pain in the ass in the beginning. There's a lot of things you have to do operationally. But once you get them situated and you get the right tenants in there, it's a pure cash flow machine. And I'm trying to build my passive income. And that's what I'm focused on. And so I go where there's more headaches, but there's more rewards and there's less competition. And that's essentially amongst all the other reasons, like bonus depreciation and the way situated, non-transitory. This is why I picked mobile home parks.
Mm, I love it, dude. Yeah, it's an asset class definitely worth looking into. A lot of GoBros. I didn't even fail to mention that, fellow GoBros here.
Yep.
We met through GoBundance. You've spoken on stage. You know, making your way through as well. But yeah, it's good, man. I love GoBundance and I love what it's doing for me and
same
really for you. Have you met your partners through GoBundance?
No.
Oh wow.
Met my partners independently.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, because that's typically the scenario, right? Like people are like, hey, I'm working with this one. It's just says yeah. GoBro, somebody in your GoPod. So let's get to the final segment as we land this bird, brother, which is embracing the F word, meaning failure. What's a story you can share with us? Some lessons learned. You shared a lot already, but.
I mean, I have so many, right? I mean, but like, it's really kind of what is relative to what the word failure is. Right. I mean, if I had stopped in any of my deals that I lost a little bit of money on or didn't go the way I was supposed to go, then it would have been the ultimate failure. But those are just learning mistakes. That's really cliche, but it's true. There's not really one. I mean, if you want me to give my biggest, like, quote unquote failure for in a real estate deal, sure, no problem, I can. But it's really not anything. I have failed so many times. There are so many times I made bad decisions at the poker table. There's so many times where I lost 150% of my net worth. There's so many times where there's deals that I've invested in that have a failure. I'm like, oh, I should have done more due diligence. But resiliency is, I think, the word after that. It's just, you just keep going forward, right? And there's been a ton of times where I haven't made money, but there's a lot more times where I've made a lot of money. And so if that's the way you like equate it to, then you're going to have those experience learning lessons. So I didn't really answer your thing, but you know, it's like to embrace failures is something that you have to do to be an entrepreneur.
Yeah. To take it back to the poker table, and I'd love to hear a hand played out, but I'm sure it's so far, so long ago. Yeah, but I'm sure there's those nightmare hands that you played in your head over and over and over. But in terms of like your personality when you were at the game, which I imagine is very similar to business, in that there's something that we call going on tilt, right? And there's if you get a hand and a cooler, they call it, where like the river card comes and it was just something like it was not technically, statistically supposed to happen, but you lost in that situation. It usually would put someone on tilt, meaning they just lose their mind. They can't even focus. Yeah. They can't even make the right decisions at that point because they won't let it go. How did you handle that situation? How did you handle not going on tilt, or did you go on tilt?
I wouldn't really say, I've obviously been on tilt before. But my typical MO would not be tilt. I can take bad beats on the chin pretty well if I know I made the right decision. If I make the wrong decision, it's more likely to put me on tilt. Knowing if I know the information of I shouldn't have done that and then I went against what I know, that would put me on tilt more than bad beats. So, but there has been times, I mean, I know my process. I get really hard on myself. I start like berating myself, but I very quickly pull myself out and I start thinking logical about it. And that's what always got me out of tilt, is like, logically, could you have done anything? Logically, with the information you have, what can you learn from it? And I just go through all the steps of it and I logically break it down. And then once I have the answer for it, I'm off tilt. And that usually happens within a few minutes.
Amazing.
So, yeah. And I also know just not to play really any hands after.
Yeah. Just let it all settle. Yeah, let the coals cool off. So everything you said there, you can be applied to business. Like everything you said there in terms of, you know, I mean, was it a logical decision? What could I have done? Could I have done something differently? How does this apply when you're making decisions in business? And then you're like, oh, maybe I could have done something different there, but moving on.
Yeah. I mean, poker is a game of incomplete information. Let's just say in real estate, it's pretty easy because it's a game of complete information. Like you can get due diligence, you can check the utilities, you can check the rents on the rent rolls, and you can ask for more due diligence. It's a game of complete information. You just want to make the right decision over the long term. And, you know, in poker, you have to make the right decision all the time to have long-term success because the cards will even out over time, right? The odds. But it's the same thing to your life and everything that you do, especially in business. Just keep making the right decision that's going to afford you a better life 10 years from now or a better business 10 years from now. And don't ever deviate from who you are in business and just keep making that right decision over and over and compound it over time. It's going to bring you wild success, right? And so I apply so much of what I've learned in poker into my real estate business and into my life. The way I break things down in my mind is mathematical odds. What are the probabilities? Negotiations have been quite easy for me in real estate. So there's a lot of things that are translated into real estate and business.
Yeah. Negotiations, sales, being able to read people. Mm-hmm. You know, that's so many parallels, man. So many. Dude, this has been gold for me as a wannabe poker pro. I look up to you. I look up to your brother. And just being able to take something that would seemingly be a negative thing and have a stigma in the world, even though it was sexy for a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if it's back to the seedy sort of stigma, but, and then you made it a win, right? You took all the wins and you literally applied it to something to create generational wealth for you and family. It's just amazing to watch, dude. So congratulations. Thanks, so with that being said, What is the one word? We've gotten to this part of the show. The one word and how you help people.
Education. That's it, man. Like, educate. Everything I do is based off education. And that doesn't necessarily mean the traditional sense, but just educating yourself on whatever you want to accomplish. There's so much abundance in this world. And so let's just talk about business in general. If you want to get into a different aspect of business, somebody's already done it. Go learn from them. Go have the education. Go to seminars. Read the books. Go online. We're also interconnected. YouTube, whatever. The education is out there. It's just on you to go get it. And so that's one thing I do at Evoke as well. People who want to invest. I've had plenty of people who want to invest with me and they don't know anything about mobile home parks. I'm like, whoa, like, let me actually teach you what we're doing. I think so. And financial literacy is a big piece of my heart because I had to learn financial literacy. And I find that often, and I don't want to generalize, but most of our population has no idea about financial literacy. And that to me hurts, truly.
Yeah. It's a beautiful thing, man. I'm sure people were going to want more information, potentially work with you. What's the best way they can reach you?
You can go to my website, evocapital.net, or you can find me on LinkedIn at Pasha Esfandiari or Facebook, Pasha Esfandiari. I'm pretty good at responding.
Yeah. Tell them you heard him here on our show.
Yeah, there
and
you go.
Yeah, that's great, man. I'm excited, man. And I'm curious to know more. So as an investor. So yeah, brother.
Sure.
I love it, man. And keep doing your thing.
I appreciate you. Thanks for having me on, man. This is awesome.
That's it for now, folks. If you'd like to stay in touch with the show, you can contact me directly at eric@onairbrands.com. That's Eric, E-R-I-K, @onairbrands.com. And if you aren't already subscribed to the show, you can find us on iTunes, Spotify, or any other podcast platform. And please recommend us to one or two people in your circle. That will go a long, long way to growing our community. Also, if you could rate us on iTunes, just take a moment to give us 5 stars. And if they have more stars, give all of them. We'd greatly appreciate you for that. And always, always like, subscribe, and share this show on social media. We'd love you for that as well. And if you have any ideas or want to hear something on a future show, please hit us up. Maybe you have a question for one of my guests, or you want to tell a story, a success story. We'd love to hear from you. You can do that, especially if you're on the Anchor platform. You can leave us a voice message. We'd love to incorporate you and your voice on a future episode. Once again, folks, thanks again for listening to the Entrepreneur Circle. Please like, subscribe, and share. I am Eric Cabral, and as always, remember, your network is your net worth. So get in the circle.